We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
This morning with us in studio, we have Brandon Bass from the law firm of John Day, local attorney. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. So every day, man, I don't know how many accidents there are per day in Tennessee. I bet there's a lot. Is there any official count?
Thousands. I mean, the good news is a whole lot of them are fender benders. It might be a frustration. Bad news is some of them are a whole lot worse than that.
Yeah, and then you have all those other accidents where people slip and fall, people, whatever happens. There's a lot of them out there. What's the strangest accident you've come across?
Strangest accident I've come across. I got to be careful in answering that one, Scott, because when we have private conversations with folks that don't result in lawsuits, then they're all confidential. People can call in any time and ask about stuff to make sure that they're not... they're allowed to ask the question without worrying about it being aired. So I got to think about ones that are public record. I will tell you two things. One is, as a parent, seeing all the cases I do, you know, car seats are so important. There's so many seem like a minor fender bender, and it turns out there's a kid that's hurt really bad. And the one area I see so often that I would have never expected things to get as bad as they do are, you mentioned slip and falls.
Yeah.
I'm not that tall. I'm not even 6 foot tall. And most people, well,
on radio, you're 8 foot one.
You know? I appreciate you giving me the extra credit. But it's not that far from me to the ground. And then I see people come in and their knees messed up for the rest of their life or something like that. So those ones always mess me up a little bit because I think, shoot, I walk a lot. I mean, I walked into this room.
I saw you.
I'm capable of it. I feel like I've been practicing for a long time now. And I do see people that are like, just take a spill of water or soap or something on the floor.
Yeah.
And take a spill and end up, you know, they're spending the rest of their life. All those times people wake up in the morning and it hurts or they can feel the weather coming. Man, the fact that that could happen at any moment. Yeah. At least when you're in the car, you got at least a general idea that, yes, one of these other people on the road could hit me. But I don't usually count on walking into a store and thinking, well, this could be the last time I walk just okay.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you go to whatever store it is, local grocery store, there's like this hidden expectation that everything's going to be all right. I mean, you're just going there to pick up milk and eggs or whatever it is you're getting.
Yeah, and it is bizarre to me how many cases I see, and I feel so bad for the folks we're able to help. But shoot, we can help them pick up the pieces. But that for what amounted to, they were stopping to pick up their kid at school or what have you, and it turned into a life-changing event for falling. Again, my leg's only about, 2 feet off the ground to my knee. You know, it just doesn't feel like that big, but it doesn't take much to do some damage depending on where you hit.
And then you have those folks who have underlying conditions, osteoporosis or a bad back already from a previous injury. And you know, I'm curious, those who were already injured, already had surgery of some type or you know, whatever the underlying thing is, do they often think to their self, you know, well, I already had this condition and this condition, so I doubt, I mean, I'll probably not be able to recoup anything if I file anything in court.
Yeah, a lot of folks do think that way. And, you know, the people that really think that way are insurance companies. They come in and say, well, this person, they went to see a doctor about their back 25 years ago. That must mean the back was always bad. Let me say this. If you made it 25 years after you've been seeing a doctor, by 40, you probably got a little bit of a bad back, and it just adds up. But there's a difference between kind of back that you might throw out when you're getting down Christmas trees from the attic and stuff, and getting hit by a car and needing surgery. So, boy, we deal with that all the time, looking at what a change there is for the person from their baseline to post-crash.
And then I guess the same is true for somebody, maybe they were taking medication of some type whenever the accident occurred. Well, I wonder, out of that category, how many people just automatically assume, well, they're going to say, I was taking this medication and that's to blame for it. But in reality, well, they've been taking that medication for probably years and it probably didn't cause it.
I honestly don't see that one quite as much. I don't hear that degree of pushback, but I think that is largely for the reasons you just said. It is, if the person's been on it for a long time and the doctor says it's okay to drive and such, then they're probably not loopy. They haven't been hitting every telephone pole between their house and their workplace every single day. So that part doesn't come up as much, but we do see a whole lot of cases where folks did take more than they should. We see a whole lot of intoxicated drivers, and the good news there is the police seem to do a pretty good job in a lot of cases of getting toxicology, getting blood work in, and figuring out how much an overuse of medication, alcohol, or anything else contributed to a crash.
You know, overall, I guess the thing to remember, in case anybody out there listening does get hurt, the thing to remember is it really doesn't matter what those underlying conditions you already had were, because the fact of the matter is, if there is something that caused your injury and you didn't do it, then there's a reason to probably talk to an attorney.
Oh, yeah. All the more so if you've ever seen a doctor for anything dealing with that body part before. I can tell you this. The insurance company, they may act nice at front and stuff, but what they'll say on the back end is, well, it looks like you're... when you told your own doctor 3 years earlier that, hey, my knee's acting up a little bit, right? And therefore, we're going to wipe out everything related to the knee injury that you're saying you had in this car crash, what have you. You're going to bounce into that problem down the road. So putting the pieces together to prove, shoot, yes, I mentioned to a doctor 3 years ago. Now, let me say that most of the time when people get asked that question, you got a medical record out there that says you mentioned to your primary care doctor 3 years ago at a checkup that your knee was a little sore that day. Yeah. Most of us don't remember that ever happened, but you're going to get attacked for it. Ultimately, they're going to say, they're going to challenge and say, you must have had something going on. We don't have any x-rays or MRIs or something like that from before this car crash that you got an insurance claim for. So how do we know that you were actually hurt and it's not just what you reported to your doctor or to a walk-in clinic 3-5 years earlier? One good answer to that is, well, after this crash, they said I needed x-rays and MRIs and stuff. Nobody wanted x-rays or MRIs before because apparently just some doctor wrote down I had a little bit of knee pain one day.
Yeah.
The fact that there are no radiology and nobody saw the need for any of that kind of stuff is a pretty good indicator that something changed. But boy, we fight about that all the time. And I feel bad for the folks who have to worry about or struggle. They see a lot of folks who try to take care of cases on their own or insurance claims after a car accident. And it may be months going by before an insurance adjuster says, well, we've now got a hold of these medical records going back years, and I've found out something that makes me say I don't want to pay you what I think your case is really worth.
So if anybody out there listening has any questions for you this morning, they can text those in at 615-893-1450. When that insurance company calls you, assuming they reach out to you, maybe you don't reach out to them, but they actually call you and say, you know, we're just following up because we see that you had an accident in our store or our client's store, or maybe an accident involving our client driver. What's the first thing you should say?
I gotta go.
Click. Can't talk right now.
Click.
But what if they're super nice? You know, super sweet. Hey, bud, how are you?
Absolutely. So here's the dirty little open secret that people don't find out till it's too late.
All right.
The insurance company is absolutely a company whose job is to not pay people money. They're getting paid premiums by some company or some person out there, and their business model is keep that money and don't pay it out to folks, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, frankly, they're not all trying to be jerks. You get a claims representative on the phone calling up and saying, hey, it sounds like you might have been hurt. Won't you tell me about it? Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. We always see that from the Miranda warning, but it's true with insurance. The law is any statement you give to an insurance company, they can use against you. And you can't use it to prove your case. This is a general rule. It can only be used to hurt you. It can't be used to help you. So you see, insurance claims representatives do a couple of things. They say they got, our policy is we got to have a statement. We think we'll be able to take care of you. We got to have a statement.
Is that legally true? I mean, do they have to have a statement from you right then or that week or that month?
No, they don't have to have a statement, period. But maybe, listen, I can write all kinds of policies. Your grocery store could write a policy that says, our policy is you may buy 6 bananas, but you only get to take one of them home. They can write their own policy to say whatever they want, their own protocols. That's not any legal rule. But they try to get these statements. Most of the time, it's a recorded statement. They say, let me just, you mind if I press record? And they talk to the person for 5 to 10 minutes, maybe going on longer than that. Say, the insurance claims rep says, this is part of our policy. This is so we can review the case, need to understand how you're doing, how this happened to you, and what's going on. And just get the person talking and hope they say something the insurance company can use to deny the claim later.
Yeah.
Or more aptly say, well, we're not denying it, but we're only going to pay you pennies in the dollar. We're going to nickel and dime you because it just you said something in that recorded statement that we want to use against you. So my answer is do not talk to the insurance company. Nothing good can come from it in most cases. And any good lawyer can tell you if it's that rare case where you could truly handle it on your own,
yeah,
without getting sandwiched. You know, there used to be a tactic. I don't see it as often because we live in an email and digital world where people are working from their phones and desks and more. But when people used to meet in person for everything, the tactic would be not just a recorded statement, but the insurance company would get a written statement out of everybody. They try to get a written statement. And the tactic the claims reps would use is they deliberately get something wrong. So the adjuster sit there with somebody and say, ask him a bunch of questions, say, well, you mind if I write it up and will you sign it for me at the end, make any corrections.
Literally the insurance claims person is writing what that person is saying, but yet putting their own little spin on it.
And when they're going through, if you say, well, my home address is 123 Springmore Lane,
yeah,
they'll write 125 Springmore Lane.
Why?
Because then they'll go back and say, would you make any changes on here that you think I got wrong and initial? So they can come in later and say, well, you initialed that. You changed your phone number or something that's obvious, but you didn't touch anything about the way I spun how you were hurt, what your injuries are, how minimal your injuries are. So you didn't make any changes there. The entire tactic there is 100% to set up the least possible payment down the road. Right? And so it feels nice and easy. They're taking care of everything for the person, but what they're really doing is building a case file that they can look at later and say, well, if this person now dares to take us to court, now we've got all the evidence we need to pay them pennies for what they could have gotten. I feel bad when I see folks who've really been railroaded into that or sweet talked into it.
Yeah.
When at the end of the day, no. Absolutely, they have you have no obligation to give them any statement like that. No matter how much you hear from the insurance people or your family hears the insurance people, the insurance folks say, well, they can't process your claim unless you give them all the stuff they need in their file.
Yeah.
That is not true. They just want that in their file.
So these tactics that you're talking about, do some insurance companies send their representatives to maybe certain classes to learn how to flip stuff around? I mean, this just sounds crazy because I didn't even, and to think that some would write down the wrong phone number, then have you sign that as part of the form and point that out in court later. That's crazy.
Classes and on the job learning, you know, you learn from your mentor and people pass along and say, this is what works really great. But the recorded statement thing, it's got to be 99% of cases that they're asking for that thing. Let me say this. If they're not asking for a statement from the victim, assume there's even something bigger up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that is going to be the extreme exception. And it is not going to be that at the end of the day, that means the insurance company really wants to pay the fair and full price. What it means is, again, of course, the insurance company would usually like to pay something, but they can pay a postage stamp in exchange for you dropping any claim you could ever have, or just dragging things out until all the deadlines have expired.
Are insurance companies or their representatives, are they allowed to pay you a visit in the hospital if that's where you are recuperating from that accident?
They are allowed to. So there are some hospitals that won't let that happen, which is probably for good reason, especially depending on where the person's recuperating. There's some hospitals, and part of that, I think back to COVID, and so many hospitals were not allowing a lot of visitors in, but they are allowed to. It is very, very common for when somebody gets seriously hurt and the insurance company knows it, or they know it could be going from bad to worse.
Yeah.
Right. Let me give you a common example. After a car accident, a lot of times people will have neck and shoulder and upper back pain, but it's not really clear to them or to their doctor where it's coming from. We got a whole lot of little body parts up between the base of our skull and the middle of our back, right? And one that comes up down the road for folks, especially if they were in the driver's seat, is a tear in the shoulder, the muscle tissue, like there's a rotator cuff in there, you see. And those things get torn when they get jostled real hard. But you don't often know it right away. So what we see insurance companies do is come out and say, we'll give you a few, you know, few thousand dollars here. Just sign on the dotted line.
Yeah.
The signing on the dotted line is absolutely saying if things go from bad to worse, the insurance company's not responsible for it. If it turns out that you've got a surgery that's needed down the road and you took a few thousand dollars from the insurance company that's not enough for the down payment to schedule a surgery, you're out of luck. You're going to have to figure out some other way to get that money, because what the insurance company is doing is putting forth a nickel and dime contract that, with the benefit of hundreds of millions or billions of dollars of investigation and research, they know is cheaper than what they might pay down the road. So they'd rather, if they give $100 to everybody who's in an accident to never call them and say it's worse than $100,
yeah,
they'd be doing okay.
I would guess there's probably tons of cases out there where somebody gets injured in some way and they talk to the insurance company, and the insurance company, like you're talking about, they realize this is probably going to be a big injury where there may be a few surgeries in the future. They probably already know, hey, if I offer this person $20,000, $30,000, and I say, we'll have you a check by the end of the month, they probably do research on knowing, all right, well, this person who got injured, they work a $30,000 a year job. They live here. We know their address. We know what car they drive and all of this. They probably look at all that stuff, and then they probably do just that, go and offer $20,000, $30,000 at most. And then the person says, yeah, I'll take that.
Well, because in that case, they know that they might owe actually 5, 10, 20 times that later. They know you're talking about, you mentioned surgery for this person. Insurance company knows exactly what that surgery is going to cost down the road. You know, they got scores and scores. They got databases. So if we can get the person to sign on the dotted line now, before they get that surgery scheduled, the insurance company doesn't have to pay for it. So this is all your medical bills are. We'll pay you this. We'll pay for the medical bills so far, just your ER bill. And we'll give you a little bit of cash in your pocket, too. That is not a kind and neighborly thing. That is absolutely them getting a steal of a business deal.
Yeah. It sounds nice on the surface there when you first hear it. But if you really think about it, it's a scary proposition.
It is quick money from an insurance company should be very scary. There are times when it makes sense, but it takes a whole lot of investigation even to make sure it makes sense. Why do I say that, times that it makes sense? Well, there's times when, look, they know that they owe more than they can afford to pay, that all the insurance policies they can put together for this victim won't be enough.
Yeah.
Right? And if you've got all the pieces in place and they offer it up, it still might not be the right number. Number one is, some folks have more than one insurance policy, right? And so they'll come in and say, well, all the insurance money in this case is $100,000. Why don't you take it? There's no more money to be had. The policy says it's $100,000. What they're not telling the person is there's other kind of policies out there called umbrella policies. There's all kinds of additional policies, meaning the insurance company can say, here, you can see on this piece of paper, we've only got $50,000 in insurance, and more, your medical bills may be more than that. Why don't you just take that and go home?
Yeah.
Don't ask whether there's another policy. Don't get it in writing in a way that you can actually use if they've lied. just please take the money and go home. So we do investigation to make sure this is really all there is. Plus, insurance isn't always the only thing. You know, if Elon Musk only carries $25,000 in insurance,
yeah,
he could cut a check out. He probably could pull money out of his pocket to pay for any medical bill you could get.
That's what I hear. He's pretty wealthy.
Right. So the amount of insurance available doesn't mean anything if they've got homes in six countries.
Yeah.
You know, so looking at, is this really all that should be paid, is important. And that quick money, no questions asked quick money, is almost always a very, very bad deal for the victim.
Now, on average, I would say most people hear what we're talking about and they're thinking to themselves, man, I don't think I would sue somebody. It's not in me to do it, you know? And I understand statements like that until you're the person who's injured, and then you're the person who has to pay the medical bills, and then you're the person who has to live the rest of your life, in some cases, with one leg or, you know, whatever happened. And when you start thinking about those injuries that people have a little more in depth, it does change your way of thinking a lot. And that's probably a good thing, because you do need to rethink it all if you do get injured.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of the people I meet with who've been hurt, they still say, this isn't like me. I don't like filing lawsuits. Let me say this. There's not a lot of people who like filing lawsuits. Just about everybody out there has better things to do with their time. You know, it's my job, and I love going to court and things, but it's my job. If I had to take time away from work and my family, no, I don't want to go mess around with that to go take somebody to court or deal with any of that. So people who've never been hurt, people who are going through insurance issues at the time, they still don't want to be involved in a court case. As a practical matter, though, the only way to guarantee full and fair payment is to show the person that you'll actually take them to court. An insurance company that knows you are never going to call their bluff. It doesn't matter what they say or do. Well, of course, they're going to give you a small fraction of what you're actually owed.
Yeah.
Because if you're not going to say and not going to prove to them, I will absolutely take you into the courtroom, then there's no reason for them to be nice.
Yeah.
That's nice is not profitable for an insurance company, especially paying out victims. So I understand that piece. The other thing I wish more people would realize is, just because you have an insurance claim and you got to show the insurance company that you're willing to go to court, doesn't mean you're always going to court. Some piece of it is, once the insurance company does see you got a lawyer, you got all the paperwork filed or ready to be filed, the lawyer's ready to go. A lot of times, after everything's been gathered and we put it in front of the insurance company enough and we show them, we will not back down. There will not be any backing down. There's not going to be this person is not going to take easy, quick money. Then the insurance company, it's not that they're doing the right thing, it's that they're doing the only thing they can do at that point. Do they want to drag it out, or do they want to go ahead and get it done? Because it's not the problem for the insurance company is not going away otherwise.
You know, when somebody does get injured, I think just as humans, we look at the driver for this company or the person who works here. We look at them as humans and say, you know, I know he didn't mean to do that. Nice guy, nice company, everything. I understand accidents happen. But then you also have to kind of think to yourself, but wait, they have an insurance company that represents them. They have an insurance policy in place to cover things like this that happened to you. And it's not fair that this happened to you, whatever that accident is. And down the road, years later, you're going to have, you know, the repercussions of whatever that accident was. And that stinks too. So you really do have to kind of think things through. And it does make sense to contact an attorney, and you do need to kind of slow your roll on talking to insurance folks right off the bat.
Absolutely. You know, good people make mistakes, and really good people to take responsibility for them. Like you said, that is why we buy insurance in the first place. I mean, part of it, people buy insurance because they have to.
Yeah.
But we are turning it in. The insurance company's taking that into account anyway. They know that their driver was in a car crash, so it's the premiums are already changing. If it is, the victim's premiums may change if they're not getting it taken care of, right? For having an accident that wasn't even their fault getting on their record. So making sure that at least the insurance companies are held accountable is absolutely critical.
Again, attorney Brandon Bass with us this morning. And if you have any questions, text us at 615-893-1450. This text that we have here says that they had an accident about 6 months ago and they had to have surgery afterwards, but the surgery did not go as it should. Is the person who caused the accident initially still at fault because of the bad surgery? I guess they're saying this whatever surgery they did, they have to redo it or something.
That is an excellent question. That's actually, there's a rule covering that. It's called the original tortfeasor rule, but there's no reason to remember that except that when we name something, it's because it has meaning.
Yeah.
It's because it happens enough frequency. And it's this. If the person who caused the car accident or caused the need for surgery in the first place cannot undercut what they owe by saying, well, it's actually the surgeon's fault over here. The surgeon could have done a better job. The surgeon can also be accountable in some circumstances, but they basically just share the payment with the original tortfeasor, the person who caused the harm. So in this case, just because the surgeon didn't do the best job, or maybe it's not even an okay job, does not change the bad driver's ultimate responsibility.
In some cases, when somebody is in an accident, maybe it's an auto accident, slip and fall, whatever it is, there can be catastrophic outcomes because of that initial accident that equal a lifetime of pain, a life where, you know, they may have to amputate, an arm, leg, whatever it is. And I think the person who's the victim here, they really have to think things through. They're never going to be able to hold their grandchild. They're never going to be able to, and then make the list. But there are a lot of bad things that can come of that initial accident that people have to think through. And do insurance companies, once you get them to court, ultimately, do you see where they are paying the proper amount in the end when you have the right legal representation? Because you're talking about millions of dollars in some cases.
Yes. Absolutely. So I think you asked a great question, Scott, and that really comes down to, a lot of times the bleeding hasn't really stopped.
Yeah.
And maybe not real quickly. You may be dealing with stuff down the road, right? People get knee replacement these days a lot, for example, or joint, shoulder, all kinds of joint replacements. And the good news is those things work extremely well. And the bad news is they're not usually forever. A lot of times they got to be replaced down the road. If you settle a case, if you take money now, when it comes time to get the replacement done, the insurance company has no obligation to pay it down the road. You already signed a contract. You already signed a deal that says this is shutting down everything for the future. This isn't a car accident case I'm describing.
Okay.
There are some differences when it comes to workers' compensation where somebody gets hurt on the job, but ignore that piece for now. There's some differences when it comes to long-term medical bills for folks hurt on the job. But folks hurt anywhere else, once everything is said and done and you've signed papers, or even because the judge has put a gavel down after a trial, it is too late to come back and even the next day say, oh wait, they now say I need another surgery. Or this, grandmother was hurt and she's now gonna go into an assisted living facility, right? Those monthly bills are gonna come in and you may be having problems with health insurance when health insurance says, sorry, this is a pre-existing condition, what have you.
You mean like years down the road, you could have this pre-existing thing, this question pop up with insurance, your medical insurance.
So we were talking earlier about what I'd describe as sort of a quickie payment, a quickie settlement. Settlement meaning you're signing a contract. One way or another, you're signing a contract that says, I will take cash now to never bother this insurance company or their driver, whoever it is that did anything wrong. I will never bother them again. I won't ask for another dollar.
Yeah.
Okay. So one necessary piece to make sure it's the amount is right, that the payment for that contract is right, is to have looked at all the medical information and stuff and be able to project, how's this person going to be doing 5, 10, 20 years down the road? Are they going to need another surgery? Are they going to need occasional check-ins with their doctor? Are they going to have to take blood pressure medicine for the rest of their life? Anything that's going to make a long-term need, that stuff is not always apparent. Unfortunately, when we walk out of the hospital right after a crash or a fall or any other kind of trauma, we don't always know exactly how everything's going to shape out.
And I didn't even think about the whole pre-existing with medical insurance companies and the fact that, you know, you may be 30 when the accident happens, but once you, let's say you're 50 and have a new job, all of a sudden you're being told, well, our health insurance company can't cover you because of this pre-existing problem caused by this accident that you had when you were 20. And then all of a sudden you're looking at monthly insurance, health insurance bills of, you know, $1,000+ a month. And that's something that people need to think about too.
Absolutely. If it is something that is likely to affect the person for the rest of their life, then looking at all of those effects, figuring out all the pieces so you can project how much money you really need, or are you letting the insurance company off the hook now? If you got a good lawyer, as aggravating as everything I'm talking about sounds like, the lawyer's job is to be aggravated. The lawyer's job is the one to go through all the records and files and figure out everything in order to project stuff off down the road and make sure it's all taken into account and make sure you're getting the best value under the circumstances, that you're not leaving something to chance, right?
Yeah.
It can be very frustrating and aggravating at times getting through all that stuff. I sure wouldn't want to do it for myself. Even knowing how to do it, it's a time intensive.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So putting all those pieces together is absolutely necessary. I feel real bad when I hear it, when I get a phone call from somebody who said I had a insurance claim 5-10 years ago and I settled it, and now they say I need a big surgery. Who do I contact about getting that paid for it? And the answer is probably nobody. I mean, probably you're going to be scrounging up a way in order to make the payments.
We got to take a short break, but before we do, and we'll figure out, you can figure out the answer after the break, let's say somebody does have this serious accident, they find an attorney, they've got legal representation and everything to kind of help them through this process. During the discovery phase of that upcoming court case, do sometimes the other side, the insurance company, do they try to negotiate a settlement because they're starting to realize this person's going to need about 10 more surgeries? Let's figure out if we can settle something before it gets to that 11th surgery where we're going to have to pay even more. Let's talk about that when we come back. Attorney Brandon Bass on the air with us today with the law firm of John Day.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
You know, gift cards are always the easiest gift. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. We will buy gift cards and just kind of have them on hand. They're amazing gifts to give to teachers. If you want to give a gift at your workout groups, you know, you have a personal trainer, family members. It's great to give gifts for 16, 17, 18 years old who are just now beginning to date and they need to be able to have some place to take someone on a date to. Gift cards are always the easiest gift. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Holidays coming up, you need to do some shopping. We have more inventory than anybody else in the area. We have cymbals, new and used, drum kits, over 300 snare drums to choose from. Love to see you come in for the holidays, get your Christmas shopping done. We have beginner kit guitars. We have beginner kit drums. We're ready for you to come stock up for Christmas. Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. If you're looking for that unique gift for Christmas, please come see us for all your holiday needs. We have a great selection of gift items for the young and old, and also for your feathered or furry friends. So come see us. The Rutherford Farmers Co-op. In our toy department, we have our Melissa and Doug toys, Ertl toys, Big Country, and Schlag animals. The Rutherford Farmers Co-op, 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, Tennessee.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Attorney Brandon Bass is on the air with us this morning from the law firm of John Day, online at johndaylegal.com. So that question, if somebody hires an attorney after an accident and the insurance company is kind of overlooking everything, looking into everything, and they're starting to see this pattern, well, this person's on their fourth surgery now, and they say they're still hurting. There's probably about four or five more surgeries to come. Do insurance companies try to figure out a way to settle then during that discovery process where they're still receiving information of medical records and this and that?
Sure. And it's a great question, Scott. The discovery process in a lawsuit is really basically information and document sharing. It's a mandatory process. It's not a matter of just giving what one side wants the other to have. Got to turn things over. But the good thing about discovery is both the victim and the insurance company are gathering and getting more and more information so they can both evaluate the case and what a jury might do it with it later, what a judge or jury might do it if there's no settlement. So in the vast majority of cases, they don't go to trial. Most of the time, everybody can see what cards are on the table. They can see, well, this doctor is mentioned in the chart, in the medical records. This guy's probably going to need another surgery down the road. Or we come and take cases, we talk to the doctors. Everybody gets to interview them with a video camera playing and somebody typing it up. And it's formal, with the idea being, well, now we know exactly what the doctor said from the horse's mouth. We don't have to guess at what they meant in a medical record. We know, and the doctor has now said, I think this guy's probably going to need to have spinal injections every few years for the rest of their life. It's fairly common these days to hear. They're going to have injections of painkillers into their spine. Well, now the insurance company and the lawyers and the victim can all take that information into account and usually can work out a full and fair, if the lawyers have all done their job well, if the lawyers have all done their job well and gathered the right information and got it together the right way, and the lawyer knows how to advise the client. The lawyer's done it before. They know how cases go forward. Then you say, well, shoot, we don't know exactly what any given group of people, what a jury, just what depends on which folks come in and how they're feeling. We don't know exactly what they'd say, but we got a pretty good idea. Most people would say that insurance company's got to pay for those surgeries down the road. And we end up settling a lot of cases over the course of that process. Of discovery, after enough questions have been answered, so that the insurance company says, well, shoot, we really thought we were going to defend this to the bitter end, but there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We owe this fellow money, and they're going to make us pay for it.
We had one question I wanted to try to, I know we only have a minute left, but they were asking in legal cases, I guess you hear more about life planners, and they were asking, if a life planner is involved with my case on my side, how helpful is that in the courtroom?
A life planner is usually called a life care planner, I think is what they're referring to. And a life care planner is a medical professional, often a doctor for specific reasons, but who sits there and says, I can tell this jury what all this patient's going to need for the rest of their life. Okay. And that may be, they may need somebody to take care of them. If they're, you see a lot of times people who have head injuries or brain injuries, for example, they may seem fine day to day, but they got a real good risk every night of leaving the stove on. Some of those folks just need somebody to come by at the end of the day, not even tidy, yeah, but to make sure the injured person closed the door and locked the door and stuff at night, and that they're not vulnerable and all those things, right? So a life care planner figures out the big picture, not just what the doctor, what the surgeon said, but the big picture for what this person needs. They can be very helpful in a case. It certainly depends on the quality of the life care planner, meaning some folks are better than others at analyzing that information and explaining it and have better credentials. And it depends on the quality of the lawyer who knows what they're doing to present it. And then it also depends on, is there any alternate explanation or reason to question. For example, I said, so people with a head injury, a really common thing is they worry about the person or leaving the stove on, the water running, or something else that could you don't want to do in your home, right? But if the adversary can come up with something and says, well, wait, there's actually a little part you can get at Home Depot that will automatically turn off a stove if you forget, we can solve that problem for 37 cents. It's real hard to prove. You need to pay a part-time employee to come by if you can just get a part at Home Depot. So I say the quality does matter, but there's the devil's in the details there.
And then, of course, things like they could bring up, well, a nursing home care is going to be required more than likely when they hit 60 as opposed to 80.
Exactly.
So I guess that stuff would add up.
It adds up
really fast.
It becomes very important, but how helpful it is, it really depends on the particular case and the quality of the folks involved.
With us this morning, attorney Brandon Bass with the law firm of John Day. Go online, johndaylegal.com. All the contact info is there, right?
Absolutely. Well, come see us anytime.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Scott.